Hello and welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of its absurdity. Hope yesterday went well for you. Sorry I couldn't be here, but sometimes life's scheduling just goes topsy-turvy and you have to adjust. I had an appointment pop up yesterday. That's not exactly the right way to put it, I guess. What happened yesterday was that I made an appointment, and the only time I could get the appointment was right after I usually wrap up the podcast, which didn't give me enough time to button things up and to process everything and to get it uploaded. And I had to make this decision. Do I move forward? Do I do it? Do I not do it? And I just decided, you know what? We'll just take the day. And rather than being in this blind rush to get everything handled, I'll just move along and take care of the appointment. And I did. And that's good. As a result of the appointment yesterday, my quarantine haircut now looks more like a human being cut my hair instead of a rabid aardvark. It's a Wednesday edition of the podcast. Good to have you along today. Hopefully you are doing well. Yesterday went well for you. As news was breaking yesterday, you were paying attention and taking note of the things that have happened in America and how crazy things actually are. And right off the top of the bat, I don't know if you saw this or not. I hope you did, but it's going to be in show notes today. And I posted a link to it on the Daily Perspective Facebook page yesterday. But this video produced by Kevin James is just awesome. It's called Out of Touch. And it's, how long is it? Hang on here. Let me just pull it up so I can see how long it is. And come on, I don't want to play the ad. Anyway, the video is just absolutely awesome. It's two buddies who bump into each other in a park. One of them's on a park bench. Kevin James, he's sitting on a park bench. He's taking it easy. And it's right at 3 minutes long. It's really worth the watch. He's out there wearing his ball cap. He's on his phone. You know, he's texting or whatever. And somebody runs by, and it turns out it's a friend of his. And they have a quick chat and agree to meet and have lunch or something. And as they're about to part, they shake hands and then notice they hear a phone, like somebody's on a speakerphone dialing, and they can hear a phone ringing, and they turn to look, and it's a guy wearing a mask, and he's dialing 911 to report them for having social contact. And what happens? I mean, it's an amazing video. You just have to watch it. It's funny, but at the same time, it's, oh my, it's not that far off. Because right now, what we have in our society is we have people who are sick and tired of being pushed around, manipulated, and unconstitutionally restricted from living their lives. And then we have the sheeple, the people who just believe everything they're told on the news, and they believe everything politicians tell them. God love them. God help them. They believe everything that politicians tell them, unless those politicians happen to be from the party they don't align with, which is interesting. At any rate, I encourage you, get a grip on this. I posted it yesterday. Go look at the Facebook page, and it'll be in today's show notes as well. So you just go make sure you get today's show notes. And I haven't talked about that in a while, but the show notes post usually within a few minutes of the end of the recording session on the live version, because the podcast goes out on Facebook Live each morning at 9, 8 Central, and it runs for an hour with actual commercial breaks and such, just kind of like a radio show. And if you're getting the podcast version, you don't get those breaks. You just get the ins and outs with the bumper music. And at any rate, the show notes post every day right after I get done, because I've I wait until I'm finished, because sometimes I'll drag something in or I will eliminate something along the way from my list of things as I see how it should run before, because during the run of the actual live program itself, things will fit together better in a different order, or possibly a story pops up during the recording time and I want to include that. So I don't post the show notes before the show. I always do it right after I'm finished. So that way you actually get the links to everything that I talk about. And usually what I do is I just read through the articles and make my comments about the articles. And in those articles, there are links to other sources. And one of them, I'm looking here today. Yes, one of them today actually is footnoted with a bunch of links at the bottom. Links to the stories, links to the sources for everything. And that's a good example of the information you get by getting the show notes. You get not only the article or the opinion piece, you also get the references. And it's important for you to have those references because you should know where this information comes from. It's just not coming off the top of my head, which is lighter than it used to be. But back to Kevin James. He's this video is just precious. I think you really should watch it, and you should share it with your friends. If you haven't seen it, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised, because even the people in Hollywood, they're seeing the absurdity of the situation. And this touches on why I appreciate absurdity as much as I do, because what we're going through right now is absurd. It's unconstitutional. It's illegal, but it's also absurd. But Mark, how could it be illegal to protect the people? The government doesn't have the power granted by our Constitution, or as far as I know, by any state's constitution, to keep you in your home under penalty of fines or jail. They just don't have that authority. Unless I think we're at war, they can't do this. But it's for the good of the... It doesn't matter. We're adults. We should be making our own decisions. If you decide to get out and you do something stupid, then you will pay the consequences for it. You have to make up your own mind. And this video, even though it's done in fun, just poking at the absurdity of our situation, and of course, as absurd production usually goes, it goes a little beyond reality. But it's not much of a stretch. It seriously isn't that much of a stretch, considering what's happening in some states. So please have a look at that video today. That's the top of my list. I want you to see that video, really. And speaking of absurd, I pulled this one in because I wanted to address the absurdity of the situation. And we'll touch back on this particular story in a story that's a little further down the list. Now, this is coming from... where is this? Oh, I don't have it. Oh, from IJR. Dr. Anthony Fauci is pushing back against President Donald Trump's previous claims of the coronavirus being under control in the United States. Now, let me clarify something. When the president says things are under control, he's not saying that everything is fixed and that everything is perfect. As I said yesterday, I posted yesterday, we have a lot of things that we didn't have a few months ago. We have a lot of information. We know better how to address things. And I'll dig into this a little bit further in just a little bit. But when the president says we have everything under control, he doesn't mean everything is completely under control and you can go back to life as normal because everything's under control. What he means is we have a much better grip on the situation now than we used to, and we know what needs to be done. During his high-profile Senate hearing Tuesday, Senator Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat dunce from Massachusetts, shared current facts about the coronavirus outbreak in the United States over the last 16 weeks. She asked Fauci for his honest opinion on whether or not the U.S. has this virus contained. He admitted, right now, it depends on what you mean by containment. See? If you think that we have it completely under control, we don't. Now, that is the reference he is making about containment, not about understanding what needs to be done to be in control of the situation. Different things. He continued, if you look at the dynamics of the outbreak, and we've seen a diminution of hospitalizations and infections in some places such as New York City, which is plateauing, starting to come down, and New Orleans. He went on to reveal that while there have been slight declines in some areas, there are other areas of the country facing spikes in coronavirus cases. He said, but in other parts of the country, we're seeing spikes. So when you look at the dynamics of new cases, even though some are coming down, the curve looks flat with some slight coming down. So I think we're going in the right direction, but the right direction does not mean we have by any means total control of this outbreak. Now, you have to keep in perspective the fact that the reason we're having these spikes is because testing is beginning in some areas, and more testing is happening in other areas, and the numbers are increasing because we're testing people. Not because there are more cases than there were before. There are more, we just know about more cases than there were before. It doesn't mean more people are getting infected. It means we're aware of the numbers of people being infected. We have a better grip on the numbers of people being infected. It doesn't mean the virus is on an upswing anywhere. It means our knowledge of the virus's activity is on an upswing in certain areas. We have a better understanding. Senator Warren went on to express concern about the current statistics. She notes that the U.S. is continuing to set unprecedented public health records. As it stands, the country is currently averaging 25,000 new cases and estimated 2,000 deaths each day. As she notes, actually, she inflated the numbers. And we'll deal with that in a few minutes because I have a separate story to talk about that. But Elizabeth Warren is going for the sensational. She is trying to paint the president in a bad light. She is trying to make this situation look far worse than it actually is. And the information being delivered to you, to me, to the general public, by politicians and by the progressive press, is such that many people believe that this is a horrible situation. It's a black plague sort of situation. That's what they believe. And nothing could be farther from the truth. What we have is a viral outbreak. What we have is the latest viral outbreak. We've had others. We have viral outbreaks every year during flu season. And we're so accustomed to it that nobody panics about it. They go about their lives. Many people get flu shots. Some don't. Some people who've gotten flu shots get the flu. Some people who don't get flu shots have never had the flu. To pretend that the politicians, the pundits, and people like Dr. Fauci actually have a firm grip on the situation is to be dishonest with ourselves. As I've said before, people like Dr. Fauci, they deal in worst-case scenarios. They will come out and say, we could potentially see millions of people die. And of course, that kind of statement put into the hands of a media that thrives on sensationalism is fuel thrown on the fire. Because what they want is big news and big stories. What they want is something to report to the people that will get their attention, hold their attention, keep them watching and listening, which drives up ad rates. Hey, I know. I have to come back to that. I came out of the broadcast industry, so I know that holding the number of people you have listening or watching for the longest amount of time possible makes your numbers look better with the ratings systems. And the higher your ratings are, the more you can charge for your advertising. So we have these people who are in the press who are doing that. And then on the politics side of things, you have politicians who take this kind of report, this kind of information, and they use it to their advantage. On the Democrat side, that means something to use against President Trump. And so they will interpret what someone like Dr. Fauci says to their advantage. And because of that, we see people like Maxine Waters get in front of a TV camera and blather on brainlessly about how terrible the situation is and how we need to keep the nation locked down until we're totally safe. Just like the mayor of Los Angeles, California said that we can't lift lockdowns until there's a cure. Well, I would suggest that the mayor of Los Angeles talk to the mayor of San Francisco and ask the mayor of San Francisco, would he have locked his town down until there was a cure found for HIV, for AIDS? Because if that were the case, San Francisco would have been locked down for the past couple of decades. This is the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Thursday, May the 14th, 2020. Big wheels keep on turning. And Facebook will probably silence this particular podcast today. Singing songs about Come on now. I have to let this play. I miss Alabama once again, and I think it's the same. Come on, everybody. That's right. Well, as I was mentioning before the break, the press will take things, the unscrupulous leftist press will take things and twist them to suit their agenda. And their agenda is more viewers. And in some cases, their agenda is to destroy the president. And we know that is especially true of CNN because the guy running the show at CNN has said so. Remember when he told, we had story after story about him telling people in those big, in their big meetings, their staff meetings, he's on the speakerphone telling them, we're focused on impeachment. Impeachment, nothing but impeachment. We're going to focus on the impeachment of the president. That's what we're after. And his entire, his hatred for Trump is what drives things at CNN. And so we shouldn't be surprised in the least when he, bless his heart, and his network do something like this. CNN tweeted a polarizing and surprising statistic this week. A statistic that suggested a large majority of Americans were in support of continuing strong isolation measures until a vaccine for COVID-19 is developed. The tweet said, 68% of Americans say a coronavirus vaccine is needed before returning to normal life, a new survey finds. As one might expect, this stat became a football in the open, don't open debate on social media. The problem is that the claim is not even remotely true. It's not partially untrue, nor is it merely misleading. It is, in fact, grossly untrue, patently, outright incorrect. The article at CNN, which was linked in the tweet, made the same claim in the page title at the time of the update. 68% of Americans say a vaccine is needed before returning to ... But the headline of that entry has a different description of the statistics. Now, it says 68% of Americans say an available vaccine is very important before returning to normal life, new survey finds. The reason it's worded differently now is because of what the survey actually says, which is not what their tweet says. Now, here's the full question, just so you understand how this breaks down. With a specific result regarding a vaccine, the question in the survey says, how important are each of the following factors to you when thinking about your willingness to return to your normal activities? And the option that is the availability of a vaccine to prevent COVID-19. Very important, 68%. Somewhat important, 17%. Not too important, 8%. Not important at all, 7%. Obviously, the fact that 68% of respondents deemed a vaccine important in their willingness to return to normal activities is not the same as saying that 68% of Americans say a vaccine is needed before returning to normal life. It should also go without saying that neither the actual measure in the poll of willingness to return to normal activities nor the CNN rewrite of returning to normal life are especially scientific measures in their own right. If you decide to go back to work and school before there's a vaccine, but perhaps avoid crowded dance floors, that could be considered not resuming normal activities. If you're one who likes to go out and dance. It's a wide range of possible definitions. Even worse, other survey questions make the CNN headline even more blatantly wrong. Here's an explanation from ARC digital editor Nicholas Grossman, who noted that the CNN item mentioned, but they didn't link to, two Gallup surveys. He looked those up. He says, I searched Gallup's polling on coronavirus, and the survey questions are less ambiguous regarding normal life, with results that differ substantially from CNN's claim. One question asks, how soon would you return to your normal day-to-day activities if there were no government restrictions? And giving four options. The most popular answer is after the number of new cases declined significantly. That got 40% in the most recent survey. The least popular answer is after a coronavirus vaccine is developed. Only 9% of those participating went with that. 9%. Claiming that this survey shows that 68% of Americans say a vaccine is needed before returning to normal life is an egregious misreading of the data. Grossman says, looking at the two Gallup questions that mention vaccines, the data shows that Americans are thinking about a lot of things and primarily concerned about a decline in new cases. In fact, it's worse than an egregious misreading, and it's not simply misleading or requiring clarification. CNN's headline indicates the opposite of what the Gallup shows. The survey shows that only 9% would definitely wait until there is a vaccine before returning to normal day-to-day activities. That's a small minority, not a large majority. Grossman, in his article, says CNN should delete that tweet, fix the article, issue a correction, and be a lot more careful to accurately represent survey data in the future. That's good advice, but CNN only took part of the advice. They changed the headline to what it says now, and then added this to the news item. Clarification. The headline on this post was updated to clarify that the survey found 68% of Americans say an available vaccine is very important before returning to normal life. The post was also clarified to emphasize that respondents were rating the importance of each benchmark to their willingness to return to regular activities. A relatively minor clarification is not a correction for a factually inaccurate headline, and the tweet sharing that inaccurate result remained live for a while, even after the clarification was made. Minutes before that post was published, it was finally taken down. Or minutes before this story was published, it was finally taken down. The American people rightly view the lockdowns and stay-at-home orders, as well as the pandemic and the virus itself, as immensely complicated issues with many contributing factors. Even more things to consider, and as situations where every action has potentially enormous consequences. It is bad enough that politicians and partisans try to take that and make it a black and white vote-getting issue. It's even much worse when a news organization plays the game. With misinformation and disinformation at the top of every news outlet's list of concerns, it would be great if they could work on their own accuracy and representations. But don't count on that happening. Because, as I've said to you so many times, sensationalism is a key factor in the news business. Splashing those sensational headlines up online to get as much attention as possible. Finding just the right words, crafting headlines to draw as much attention as possible. It is not at all unlike those social media ads you see. You know the ones where it says, you won't believe what so-and-so's mansion looks like. And then you go search through this slideshow of 99 pictures and find out there's not a picture of anybody's mansion in there at all. It's just a headline to get you to go click at their site and be exposed to an ad associated with every one of those slides. so they can make more money. So CNN misreports intentionally the results of surveys. Surveys which actually say that only 9% of the people care that much about them, of the vaccine being made. They just want to know that we're over the hump, that we actually have flattened the curve, as they've been saying. And everything indicates we have. And if you're thinking, yeah, but they're saying there's this many more cases here and there's spikes here and there. Yeah, because we're increasing testing. Almost every day, more testing. It's spreading to more places. The testing is becoming more sophisticated. The testing is getting better. And as a result, we know about more cases. It doesn't mean the numbers of cases are increasing. It just means we know more about them. It's kind of like in a situation where you've got, say, a stadium full of people, but the lights are only on in one section of the seating. You can only see the people under the lights. You can't count the total number without the lights being on. And as section after section becomes lit, we see more and more people. Those people were already there. The numbers didn't increase just because the lights came on. But when you're dealing with politicians in the news media, they don't paint the picture that way, do they? Wait a minute. Oh, come on. Nothing.
They're ripping my socks off.
The murder hornets again. No. I need to find the link and post it for you today. You can buy Murder Hornets t-shirts now. You can. Yeah, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but I saw it last night and almost fell out of my chair. It looks like a high school football team logo. The Murder Hornets. It's what it looks like, a team shirt. And it's just awesome. I'll see if I can find that and post it for you today. It's awesome. It's just awesome. I may have to buy one. I saw one. Where was it? I saw it and then I showed it to my wife. I showed it to Jane. Said, I may have to get this t-shirt. But it's like, it's $28 plus shipping. That's Disney Park prices. Oh, no, I don't think so. Anyway, I just thought you might like to know that. Well, I told you earlier I was going to talk about Senator Elizabeth Warren, and here's the story I was referring to. It's coming from IJR, and it's a story written by Savannah Reichick. It's called Elizabeth Warren, Competence is Missing at the Federal Level Amid the Coronavirus Pandemic. And I have my own thoughts on this when we get through with this. Senator Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat from Massachusetts, is taking a swing at federal leadership for what she claims is a lack of implementation of measures to conduct contact tracing and testing amid the coronavirus outbreak. While she acknowledged the states are able to take part in the national effort to combat the coronavirus, she is also aware that their power is limited in certain aspects. According to Warren, there are also a few things missing from the federal level. Warren told MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, "You're saying we need competence and leadership, and that's what's missing at the federal level. The problem is there are many things the states can do by themselves, and God bless them, they're out there trying to do it every day to open more emergency hospitals and do all kinds of work to try to keep the citizens safe." And then she claims states are not able to implement a national plan for contact tracing and testing. She recognized Americans are constantly moving from state to state, which is something states cannot control on their own. And Warren called on the federal level to produce and distribute test kits, including swabs and test tubes. She expressed she believes leaving states to their own abilities is wasteful and costs people's lives. Quote, "The notion of saying to the 50 states and to Washington and D.C. and to Puerto Rico, hey, you're all on your own, good luck to you, and try outbidding each other for what's necessary, that's not only wasteful, it costs people's lives. It wastes dollars and it puts us further and further behind in responding to the crisis. The nation continues to battle the coronavirus, and according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the outbreak isn't completely under control." We talked about that a while ago. As of Wednesday morning, this is last Wednesday, 1.3 million confirmed coronavirus cases in the U.S., 82,000 deaths. So this was yesterday. So she says, you're saying we need competence and leadership, and that's what's missing at the federal level. Let me correct that. What's missing at the federal level is progressive manipulation of the people using fear of the unknown as a motivator. Progressive politicians, like Elizabeth Warren, love to use fear as a tool for manipulation. They love to play the hero who comes to rescue the people. What she's describing that should be happening at the federal level is that fear and manipulation, is the testing, is the contact tracing. Let me just say this. When you hear people talking about contact tracing, you should go buy more ammunition. Because when they start talking about contact tracing, they're talking about taking names. They're talking about tracking business people going into businesses. It's already happening because we're seeing in certain states where they're recommending that, okay, well, when your barbershop opens, we want you to keep a log of every customer, names, addresses, phone numbers. We want to know everybody that comes in and goes out because we want to be able to find these people if they get sick, and we want to be able to contact everybody they've had in contact with, they've been in contact with. And this is their rationale. That is contact tracing. Let's be clear. There is no constitutional basis. They can't do this. They can't. Elizabeth Warren claimed that states are not able to implement a national plan for contact tracing and testing. Well, duh. There shouldn't be a national plan for contact tracing and testing. There should be suggested guidelines at the very most. And the federal government should keep its hands off of the sovereign states. Each state governs itself with partnership through the federal government. The federal government should not be telling the states to take names and track people. Moving forward, she recognized Americans are constantly moving from state to state, which is something states cannot control on their own. We are? That's odd, because I, myself, most people I know, most people you know, basically just most people, don't constantly move from state to state. Do you constantly move from state to state? Do you? I mean, unless you're a trucker, you're not constantly moving from state to state. No. This is one of those statements that politicians like Elizabeth Warren throw out as though, oh, this is true. Everybody knows that. When it is anything but true, it's just something she throws onto the fire to make things brighter, hotter, and scarier. Moving forward, she says, the notion of saying to the 50 states and Washington and to Puerto Rico, hey, you're all on your own, good luck to you, and try outbidding each other for what's necessary, that's not only wasteful, it costs people's lives. Senator Warren is grossly unqualified to be a member of our government if she doesn't understand federalism. The states are supposed to fend for themselves, to govern themselves, to make their own deals in the best interests of the people of each state, because the particular needs of each state are unique. Actually, Senator Elizabeth Warren does understand federalism. She just hates it with every fiber of her being. And she deeply desires that the United States of America could become the socialist state of America. She says, the nation continues to battle a coronavirus, and according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, the outbreak is not completely under control. And again, I say, well, duh. No viral outbreak is ever completely under control. Never. Even with vaccines, we still have flu outbreaks every year, and people die every year. This fantasy that we can ever have such a thing completely under control is ridiculous at the very least. But that's the talking point you're hearing from the progressive left.
We must have nationwide testing of the vaccine in order to get this pandemic under control. We can't open up and get back to our lives until the danger,
wait a minute,
danger is gone.
Well, pardon my French, but bull feathers. We have a far better understanding of how this virus spreads and how it affects those who contract it. We know that the overwhelming majority of those who catch it will survive. And we know how to protect the vulnerable. In that sense, we do have a certain level of control over what's happening. And we don't need manipulative government con artists like Elizabeth Warren telling us what needs to be done. Elizabeth Warren is focused on destroying a president and changing the decision America made in 2016. She's not focused on the truth. Progressive politicians like Senator Warren want Americans to be afraid and thus be willing to stay safely cocooned inside their homes so their vote-by-mail plans can be implemented as a means of defeating Trump in November. They know how insecure mail-in votings really are. They know how many millions of votes were never recorded in 2016 and 2018 because those ballots were lost in the mail system. They also know how vote harvesting, which is what they'll propose as a secure way of protecting those votes, they know how vote harvesting helped them put progressives into office in conservative Southern California and other places. Progressives, like Elizabeth Warren, know they can't defeat Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And that any shenanigans they may attempt to replace him will be met with overwhelming opposition. So they're trying to convince Americans that COVID-19 is going to kill everybody who doesn't stay home. And that the Trump administration's ignoring their health and safety by moving toward reopening the nation. Their plan is to keep us under effective house arrest through the election so they can steal it. Will anybody really challenge Elizabeth Warren on what she said? Not really. Especially where she was talking. On MSNBC? To Rachel Maddow? Rachel Maddow's been wrong about everything she's had to say about the Trump administration from the day she said he would never become president. She's been wrong again and again and again. Of course Elizabeth Warren would go on with Rachel Maddow to talk about things because she's not going to get any pushback. Nothing's going to happen. Nobody's going to question her. She can say whatever bizarre, twisted, weird, psychotic thing she wants because she's on friendly ground. Because the person she's talking to is just as psychotic and weird and twisted as she is. But honest thinking Americans know better. We're watching things happen. Those of us who actually are producing, those of us in America who have that spark of exceptionalism, those of us who understand how great this nation is and what it has done for the entire world since its time of birth, we see through people like Elizabeth Warren and we recognize the lies whenever they are told. And that's because we have learned to recognize the truth. We understand the truth. We're well acquainted with reality. And when something that is not true, that is not real, that is in fact a lie is presented to us as truth, we recognize it immediately, which is why we see through people like Elizabeth Warren. Wow. How long has it been since you heard this one? Welcome back. It's the final segment of the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I almost said Wednesday. This is what happens when I miss a day. I'm having trouble keeping a grip on my own reality. Oh, my word. I want to wrap things up today with a little reminder about what's happening with General Flynn. I know that we're seeing more leftist shenanigans going on. Pulling a judge, a progressive leftist Clinton-appointed judge out of retirement and passing the buck off to this guy, who essentially is just going to peel this all back open again and have it all happen all over again rather than closing the case. It's just a despicable situation. But those who aren't aware of what's really going on, doesn't matter to them. Orange man bad, that's all that matters. From the Proof blog, I want to bring you a story by Joshua Weigert. It's called Michael Flynn, the FBI and Obama's Corruption. In 2008, a little-known first-term senator from Illinois won the Democratic presidential nomination by defeating the favored Hillary Clinton. Obama ran on a campaign of hope and change, and yes, we can. He was not going to be part of the typical Washington elite class. Barack Obama then became President Obama. Flash forward 8 to 12 years, and two dramatically different viewpoints exist regarding Obama's presidency. One, Obama's presidency was historic and was as smooth and scandal-free 8 years. Or two, Obama's presidency was historic, but also extremely corrupt and full of scandals and government overreach. The former viewpoint is largely held by Democrats, the mainstream media, and students, while the latter viewpoint is held by Republicans, conservatives, and anyone paying attention to politics during Obama's 8-year presidency. For the entirety of Obama's presidency, the mainstream media gushed, swooned, and protected him. They treated him with kid gloves during periods where he should have seen heavy scrutiny. Some of those periods include Obama using the IRS to go after political opponents, former Attorney General Eric Holder labeling himself President Obama's wingman, or Holder's successor Loretta Lynch meeting on an airplane with Bill Clinton while the DOJ was investigating Hillary Clinton. This past week, Obama, while talking about the DOJ dismissing the Michael Flynn case, suggested releasing Flynn was political hackery. Obama claimed there was no precedent for someone who committed perjury getting off scot-free. Obama then discussed how he's worried about our institutions being potentially corrupted by this administration. Well, Flynn wasn't brought up on perjury charges. Flynn pled guilty to one count of making false statements to the FBI during an interview he didn't know was for an investigation. Obama discusses his fear for institutions not following the rule of law, yet has no comment about his DOJ's despicable and corrupt behavior during this Flynn investigation. Michael Flynn was being charged because he had a conversation with the ambassador from Russia. That's it. That's the case. That's the entirety of it. According to Hill, the FBI opened a According to The Hill, the FBI opened a counterintelligence probe of Flynn in August of 2016 on the absurd ground that he might be a clandestine Russian agent. Flynn is a retired 3-star Army general and decorated combat commander who had then recently written a book identifying Russia as a committed global adversary of the United States. This suspicion was frivolously supported. James Comey, the then director of the FBI, authorized closing the investigation in December of 2016. The paperwork was completed on January 4th, 2017, which was 20 days before the interview with Michael Flynn. The FBI then learned that the future National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, had communications in December with Ambassador to Russia, Sergei Kislyak. However, the government was already monitoring Kislyak, and recordings indicated that Flynn did not do anything inappropriate during the interview. In other words, there was no ground to reopen or continue the counterintelligence investigation or to open a criminal investigation. I would say, as an aside here, Flynn was also doing his job. He was communicating with people to assure a smooth transition. The DOJ contends in its memorandum in support of the case dismissal that any false statements made by Flynn, quote, could not have been material because there was no legitimate basis to investigate or interview him. Federal law makes materiality an essential element of a false statements charge. If the Flynn interview was not connected to any proper investigation, any false statements, if any, any false statements made could and would not have been material. The discussion between Flynn and Kislyak was recorded, and Flynn stressed that the agents could listen to the conversation if they wanted to know what was said and discussed. Because of this, any misstatements during the interview of Flynn could not have affected the FBI's understanding of the Flynn-Kislyak situation. It is important to note that President Obama was in the loop with the Flynn investigation. He talked to Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates about how Flynn was being targeted for an investigation. He was aware of what was going on with the Flynn investigation, as he was aware of the wiretapped phone calls with Flynn. This is important because the next part shows how the FBI mishandled this investigation. It appears the agents attempted to deceive Flynn about the reason of the interview. In an FBI 302 report, you've heard that batted around a lot, a 302. It's a report. It's a form used to take notes and summarize interviews with witnesses. It would start with noting the nature of the interview, which the FBI agents did not do. Flynn was discouraged from consulting counsel and from reporting the FBI's request for an interview from the White House chain of command. Furthermore, Flynn was not given the advice of rights. They didn't read his rights to him. In other words, there was no due process. The FBI attempted to elicit statements by deceiving Flynn about his legal rights. The FBI does not electronically record most interviews, which is why 302s are very important in general. 302s are supposed to be completed 5 days after an interview. So they're as accurate as possible. One agent usually is the main interrogator, while another agent takes notes. Then they draft and finalize their 302 report together so that there are no mistakes and that it accurately reflects the interviewee's statements. Accuracy is key here. Flynn's 302 was the furthest thing from accurate. His 302 went through several drafts, and after 7 days after the interview, it was still being edited. Not 5 days, 17 days. We know from text messages that Lisa Page was editing the 302. Page was not an agent nor present during the Flynn interview. Why was she editing what Flynn said? In texts, we know that Peter Strzok, who interviewed Flynn, heavily edited Joe Pienka's version. He also interviewed Flynn. Strzok planned to make final edits after Page was done with her edits. It took another 5 days, 22 days after the interview, for that 302 to be completed. The FBI has not produced the earliest versions and edits of the 302. The case against Flynn comes down to the testimony of two FBI agents, Strzok, who was terminated for misconduct, and Pienka, who appears to have played a significant role in serial misrepresentations made to obtain surveillance warrants against Carter Page, the former Trump campaign advisor. In other words, there was no case against Flynn. Instead, it was just FBI corruption. The Hill writes, quote, if this case had gone to trial, the whole sordid story would have come out. No rational jury would have convicted Flynn of making false statements based on the testimony of Strzok and Pienka. The Bureau's irregular tactics, its dissembling, the equivocal nature of Flynn's statements, and the FBI's sense that he was not trying to be deceptive would have made proof beyond a reasonable doubt an insuperable hurdle. The FBI coerced Flynn into a guilty plea to continue the Trump-Russia collusion investigation. In the end, the DOJ dismissing the prosecution of Flynn was justifiable, given the serious corruption and mismanagement of the investigation instigated by then-Commander-in-Chief Barack Obama. Obama's goal was to spy on and to find something, anything, that could be used against President Trump and his allies. Flynn's biggest crime was being associated with President Trump. Will the mainstream media scrutinize the handling of this investigation? It's very unlikely they will. In their eyes, Obama was and is a flawless president. Although Obama started his presidency with hope and change, he ended it with corruption. He said he wasn't going to be your typical Washington politician. He was right. He was far worse. And now, we know a number of members of his administration, including Joe Biden, made unmasking requests about Flynn so that they could hear his phone calls as well. We know this goes all the way to the top because we have those records. They're public now. We know they were looking for a way to get Flynn, because getting Flynn would give them ammunition to fire at Trump. They could use it to discredit him in the eyes of the uninformed, the low information voter, those who get their information from the evening news and the mainstream alphabet news networks, those who aren't paying attention and really understanding how this was all working. They knew that they could be easily influenced. They also didn't like Flynn because he was an honest man. He is an honest man. Which is why they had no case against him, until they decided it was vital that they have a case against him. And here we are today. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.